This episode of the Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you by 355 of the coolest people ever to visit patreon.com/JURY. Hoink! Folks, gentle people, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, DiamondClub.tv proudly brings to you the only one mic show starring Justin Robert Young and the ear listening champion of the world, me, Gerbs, your old foul pal. The Foul Pal. That's what they call me. Justin Robert Young here at your service. And this is... Hey. Jury Talks in the Day. We are doing this late as fuck. Late AF. Supposed to be a Sunday show. So all of a sudden, Sunday rolls around. Hey, where's Jury? Goes up a cry from the gentle town folk. Nowhere to be found. Want to know why? Because I was on a plane. It's a funny story about the plane, too. I'll tell you that in a second. Get to Austin. I'm like, you want to know what? I'm going to do Jury Talks in the morning, Monday morning. Turns out, didn't have as much time as I thought I was going to. And I'm like, all right, well, Tuesday's straight the fuck out because I got to fly back to San Francisco. Tuesday night then. Get back home Tuesday night. No, that's not going to happen. Wednesday comes. You got to do Jury More. I could do Jury More and Jury at the same time. So then, it falls to now. But this, a lot of people, maybe the number one thing that people ask me, how do I do my own podcast? How do I know that a podcast is worth doing? And I feel like I am unqualified to answer 95% of the questions that people ask me. But this question I am qualified to answer. Because if there's one thing I'm good at, and I've made any kind of a living off of, it is being understanding of the audience that I have as opposed to the audience for which I might covet from other people. And here is my one lesson. If you miss an episode and you still want to do it and do make time to do it throughout the rest of the week, you know you have a podcast that you want to stick with. You know you have a community that is deserving of something. You have aggrieved them, and I come to you hat in hand and say, how about a Jury Talks in the Day? And so with that, I'm going to do a little bit of more newsy kind of talk. All right. And I'm going to open the phone lines the entire episode. You want to talk? Let's talk. Okay. 954-892-5665. That's the number. Call it on up. And we will give ourselves a fun little chat. Again, 954-892-5665. You want to sneak out to the bathroom? You know, maybe make yourself a call. Get in on this conversation. Let's go ahead and do it. Because I think we're doing mid-afternoons here on the East Coast. We're doing fucking, we're doing lunch rush on the West Coast. So we're going to turn this motherfucker into a goddamn call-in show. In fact, we may or may not... be going head to head with Rush Limbaugh right now, which is just a delight for me. All right, so here we go. What do we want to hear about? Okay, let's start with this. Can we have a fucking conversation about shower curtain liners? All right, I'm not fucking joking around. This is serious as a fucking heart attack. A lot of news is out this week. Jared's a pedophile. Ashley, everyone's cheated on each other on Ashley Madison. Fucking Donald Trump is still trumping it up. He's making that booty sing like a trumpet. But I want to talk about easily the most important fucking issue facing our nation: shower curtain liners. Now, I might be fucking out of my goddamn gourd, ladies and gentlemen, but in my mind, the way I was raised, there are two parts to shower curtains. There is a decorative outer layer, and then there is a functional plastic inner layer. Why do you have two curtains? Well, I'm glad you asked, dumbest person on the fucking planet. Because if you've ever gotten into a shower, you realize that water sprays fucking everywhere. So you need one sheet that leads inside the tub and one that is on the outside. Why? Because it would look weird if you just had a clear plastic sheet that you were fucking washing behind. It would basically make sure it would, you know, it's showing your albeit fuzzy versions of your, you know, dingle and vagina all over the place, right? Not very pretty. Doesn't look good. But it functionally keeps the water in. Decoratively on the outside, something good to look at, something that blocks the field of vision between prying eyes and your most private of privates, but not exactly good at absorbing water and keeping it in. In fact, many of these are just cloth and wind up getting soaking wet. Now, a lot of you are saying, Justin, duh, of course, this is what it is, okay? Like, we all know what you're talking about. I don't see what's controversial about this. And if you're saying that, God bless you, you sweet summer child. You have led a life that I hope never finds the tarnishing that I'm going to describe. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I travel. I visit a lot of different bathrooms. I've showered in a lot of different showers over the last 4 years. And there is a disturbing, troubling trend that I would like to fucking address right now. No longer will it go unmentioned. And it doesn't matter whether or not this is a hotel, whether or not this is somebody's house. This is something that, for whatever reason, we have a misguided sense in America about shower curtain liners. Because never should a shower curtain liner at any moment be on the opposite side of the tub. Meaning that you have both the decorative and the liner on the outside of the tub. I have no idea why this happens. I have two theories. And by the way, people are like, if someone's like, oh, I've never seen it, it's fucking real. Dry land is not a myth. I've seen it. It is a fucking real deal, ladies and gentlemen. I've seen this shit. I've seen it in homes. Our friends do it. Our hotels do it. Why are you doing it? Is it to prove freshness that you have come in and recently cleaned the tub and so you therefore leave something fucked up? Like, why would you even leave the possibility that these fucking, that like the goddamn bathroom floor could just get soaked? It's not like these showers are on a cliff face like it's in Tyrion Lannister's sky cell in fucking season one of Game of Thrones. Like he's in the Eyrie awaiting trial by combat. And that the big gale force wind come in and blows the fucking shower liner from the inside of the shower to the outside. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I think it's counterproductive to America. And it's why men are driven to cheat on AshleyMadison.com. So much more of this and many, many other topics, including the contender and Jared from Subway being a pedophile, coming up on this episode of the Justin Robert Young Podcast. Jared from Subway is a pedophile. Y'all hear about this? Jared. So I'm not going to say that I knew Jared from Subway was a pedophile, but I never really trusted Jared. I didn't really like the cut of his jib because I got this theory. I don't trust people of a certain age with a certain waistline, pants-wise. All right? I don't... Like, if you're old as shit, if you're old as fucking dirt, if you're Harry S. Truman and you roll up in the club with a fucking high-ass pant belt situation, it's like, all right, whatever, man. That was of a bygone era. You know, it's probably like a metaphor for World War II or some shit. Like, that's why you have, like, some high-ass pants. Okay, I got it. All right, it's fine. Understood. But if you're a younger dude, and by younger dude, I mean anyone at this point under the age of 50, and you have really high pants, I just think something's wrong with you. Like, and it's a bias for me, but it's a bias confirmed when Jared is revealed to be a pedophile, because it was always the thing that I thought was weird about Jared. So a lot of people are talking about this. I mean, and obviously, before we get into the things that will sound like jokes, let's get ahead and get this straight. Young girls that are under the legal age of consent, specifically underage prostitution, is about as wrong as wrong can get. It's terrible. It's awful. He deserves to be prosecuted for all of it. And also, I very much enjoyed the brand new slogan from Quiznos. Hey, at least we don't fuck kids. Because really, that's pretty much all that Quiznos has going for it. But I don't know why. I mean, I know why this is a story. It's a story because he was somebody who was kind of inexplicably famous, had inexplicably stayed famous, and now has a big, gigantic crime fall upon him. Or at least the sins of his crimes fall upon him. Which, by the way, Jared, apparently a kinky motherfucker, beyond all this, you know, underage prostitution shit, like... That dude was like going back and forth with a franchisee of the Subway Sandwich Corporation, which, by the way, here's, if you don't know about how franchises and franchisees work, let me give you a brief little primer. So, all right, I got an idea. It's called Gerb's Taco Shack, okay? And I'm like, man, this is a fucking great idea, Gerb's Taco Shack. I go and I do my business research on it. I figure out all my sourcing, how much it's going to cost to set up a business, how much it's going to cost to, hire labor, yada, yada, yada. All the boring ass nuts and bolts, buy for one, sell for two business bullshit. I set up one Gerb's Taco Shack. That does pretty fucking well. Then I'm like, well, I can make a lot of money if I franchise this. So what happens is I go to these franchise fairs where a bunch of random motherfuckers with money show up because they would just like to invest it in a thing and have a business. Now, those are two very different things, because normally you just invest in some shit. Money goes in, money comes out. That's it. You have no say in anything. You just put your money into a business and it falls out for you. Starting a business is all what I just did in starting Gerb's Taco Shack. A franchise is a totally different situation. And really, it's the best of both worlds for people. You get a microwavable business in that you don't really have to start shit. All you got to do is just find a location and then you buy the franchise rights. And usually at that point, the franchise dictates what you're buying, when you're buying it, how you're buying it, with a few certain provisos in that. And then you have a business. You have just kind of invested a flat amount of money, and yet now you are running your business. And it's a successful business because you're buying into the Gerb's Taco Shack empire. Now, this is all to say that franchisees are not just random motherfuckers that you hire. So Subway, which is one of the most successful franchises in modern American history, or world history, I'm pretty sure. When you come and buy a Subway, when you buy the franchise rights to run a Subway, you are a rich motherfucker. And they're pretty delicate about who they let buy them. Because if you just let any asshole buy your franchise, then you are going to damage the reputation of your brand as a whole. Because somebody's going to run a shitty, shitty, shitty version of your store. So this story comes out. Before all this shit comes out about Jared and the underage girls, Jared was apparently fucking a franchisee. Somebody that had, with her own money, be it hard-earned or through, you know, whatever other means, like inheritance or something like that, had bought a Subway. Jared starts fucking her. And then, apparently, shit gets dirt McNasty. Like, it is like some filthy shit going on that, like, in their text conversations. He's talking about all these underage hookers he's fucked. He's talking about how he wants her to list herself as a hooker on Craigslist so he can watch other men fuck her. Jared is into some shit, folks. I mean, understand. Understand what this is, because it's easy to get lost in the celebrity, all right? Subway is its own entity, founded by its own founders, making its own money. They find this random dude that turns out to be the pitch man of the century, until he isn't. This pinch, the fucking Kool-Aid man is fucking some person who is distributing Kool-Aid, who has bought a shit ton of Kool-Aid from the Kool-Aid Corporation to be the middleman to sell it to America. That's what's happening. The fucking mascot is fucking somebody, a key element of their business, and saying, hey, list yourself as a hooker for $300 on Craigslist so I can watch a stranger fuck you. This entitlement is fucking insane. And when you get to this level of what you expect from life, if you're fucking Jared Fogle, then the leap to I should be able to fuck girls that are underage is really not all that much. Now, these are all, one is illegal and one is just creepy, understood. But when you have ginned yourself up to a certain level of feeling that you are beyond reproach, that you are beyond restitution, that you are beyond punishment, this is where these kinds of behaviors happen. It's fucking insane to me. It is absolutely crazy. And now, you know, I don't know. I guess we're just going to have to deal with more Jay Glazer in Subway ads. But fucking Jared, man. Jesus Christ. So, Mitzula in the chat room, the old schooler, the Mike Rula, who again, ladies and gentlemen, is not a Vegas guy. He's the Vegas guy. If you are in the Diamond Club and you are listening to this program, then go ahead and find at Mitzula on Twitter if you are going to Vegas. Because one day, that guy is going to charge $50 an email just to have somebody email just their points of interest in Vegas, and he will email back to them exactly what they need to do because it is a great service. Everybody wants to go to Vegas to have the Vegas experience, and they all know kind of what they want to do, but they have no idea how they want to do it, which is why they get fucking sucked up by these scumbags with fucking limos to bring them into random shitty strip clubs because they don't know which strip clubs to go to. They don't know where they are. They don't know how to get to them, and they don't know how to do it at the best bang for your buck. Mitsula does, and one day he's going to charge for these emails. But for right now, you could probably just hit him up on Twitter and get him to do it for free because he's a really nice guy. He says in the chat room that money and celebrity make people do crazy things. I disagree. Money and celebrity do not make people do crazy things. People want to do crazy things. People think they can get away with crazy things thanks to money and celebrity. It is not the desire that gets manufactured. It is the belief that there is no consequence to your action because, by way of social proof, there hasn't been. People wonder why, why do these athletes do all this crazy shit? Because they've gotten away with 90,000 things that we have not seen. Why would they think anything else? Jared Fogel was fucking underage prostitutes. He was actively fucking financially and physically the business for which paid him. And there were no consequences. That motherfucker wasn't getting divorced until yesterday. So why would there be any kind of consequences in this dude's mind? There wouldn't be. I mean, like, there's. I. If you were to talk to him and say, "Why did you do what you did?" and you were to hit him, strip any thought that he might think that he's going to come back from this or that he's going to need to make amends or he needs to act humble, he would say to you, "Because I'd gotten away with so much, why wouldn't I get away with something else?" All right. By the way, Will Harris has just tried Hearthstone. Everybody tweet Will Harris right now and say, we love you. And we're happy that you're in the family. And also just send him that scene from Freaks where they go, geeble gobble, geeble gobble, we will make you one of us. Okay, let's talk about the Royal Tenenbaums. I love the Royal Tenenbaums. It's my favorite movie of all time. Not my favorite movie of all time, but my favorite Wes Anderson movie of all time. It is so good. Let me see if somebody got this. Okay, here we go. Here we go. We're gonna see whether or not we can find this scene. It is one of my favorite scenes, and it describes so much in life. It is a scene in the Royal Tenenbaums when Royal, who is the shitbag father of this clan, is in a flashback talking to what looks to be an arbitrator in a legal dispute between him and his son, played by Ben Stiller, Chaz. Let's go ahead and listen here.
Because I started the corporation when I was a minor, so my father was the primary signatory on most of my accounts. He also stole bonds out of my safety deposit box when I was 14.
All right. So now we have, in beautiful filmmaking language, gone back and forth. We have established that this is an argument between a father and a son, that the father is kind of a wheeler dealer, that the son is certainly aggrieved and is taking out a lot of his frustrations on how he was raised against his father, who has very obviously taken advantage of him. The camera swings back to Gene Hackman playing Royal when he looks at his lawyer and then the judge and says simply this.
You think you could?
Just that laugh. Just that laugh. That fucking laugh is everything you need to know about getting fucking caught in a goddamn lie. Because it is everything. Everything. Let's see if we can do it one more time. Here we go.
The game, wasn't it?
No. We were on the same team.
Were we? Well, you sued me twice.
Here we go.
Got me disbarred. I don't hold it against you, do I?
And how is it possible for Mr. Tenenbaum to withdraw these funds without your written authorization?
Objection, Your Honor. Damn it. Why don't you leave the objections to me, Royal?
Because I started the corporation when I was a minor, so my father was the primary signatory on most of my accounts. He also stole bonds out of my safety deposit box when I was 14.
That is the laugh that was going through my head all day yesterday when I read the news that Ashley Madison's entire database had been leaked online. This was a story that was slow developing. It was a couple weeks ago that we found out that the Impact team, the whatever hacker consortium, however they would call themselves, infiltrated Avid Media's databases and took a gigantic part of their membership database and threatened to release it if Ashley Madison did not shut down. The motives for this are unclear, although it seems a little personal. I could not help but imagine in households across the country that we would just get the Royal Tenenbaum situation. That it would just be, hey, honey, were you cheating? Are you cheating on me? No, God, no. Cheating on, honey, I love you. I love you. I could never cheat on you. Did you ever sign up for AshleyMadison.com? Well, you know, it was in the news. I checked it out. Now I remember I was at Duffy's and Mike was talking to me about it. By the way, he's a member. Throw your friend under the bus. But he dared me to sign up. I never did anything, but I signed up for it. But honey, I went on the Ashley Madison website. And I asked, I tried to find out, you know, whether or not your email was on there, and it turns out that it was, and you know, that you've been a paid member for like 3 years.
Bonds out of my safety deposit box when I was 14.
That's the only reaction you can have. Is the Royal Tenenbaum laugh. It's the only thing. You're caught dead to rights, and all you have is your charisma. You only have just whatever relationship you've built up with whatever person in front of you, so you might as well abandon the pretense of trying to logic your way out of it. You can't fucking escape from this box, so all you can do is look him dead in the eye and give him the... It's the only thing. Man, you know, I'm sure people are going to get divorced. That's sad. This is the point in the program that I tell you about the contender. The contender has done really, 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 really well. You know, you can go to thecontender.us/Kickstarter. We were featured on boingboing.net today, which is just a fucking amazing situation, you know, because, I mean, hell, me and Andrew have been reading Boing Boing. Andrew turned me on to Boing Boing, you know, fucking, oh God, 8 years ago, 10 years ago. And I've been reading it ever since. It's really good, and it's amazing to see an element of my own handiwork listed on there. And by the way, Andrew is also going to be at a Boing Boing event, the Weekend of Wonder, coming up. Go ahead and check that out at Boing Boing. Andrew's been telling me about it. It sounds super fun. But contenders at $82,675 at the point that we are recording this. We are now the 50th most popular card game in Kickstarter history, which, considering how much money has been raised for motherfucking card games on Kickstarter, is just insane. We have 10 days to go. Now, when I tell you that this is not met with universal happiness within our little Kickstarter creator incubator team, let me explain to you what I mean by that. Because we are thrilled that we have gotten the support that we have. It's insane. However, there were kind of several paths that we could go with the contender, and we had financial outlays for all of them. If we had been at about $10,000 at this point, and then had gotten to 15, which was our goal, by the end of the 30 days, it would have been great. We wouldn't have made much money, maybe a couple hundred dollars each, but we would have done our best. We would have really made the decks to be really, really awesome and put them out there and just said, hey, you want to know what? Good try. We had a really good time. Now we have something really cool on our resume. Fun times in Cleveland again. If it had made 14 up till now and then jumped up to 70 in the last 48 hours, even more awesome. Now we understand, hey, listen, you know, didn't quite get the traction we wanted, but we can do a great version of the game, put it out. That's the end of it. And we get a little bit more money in our pockets. But you motherfuckers who are watching this show right now had different ideas. You said, fuck that. It is very clear that me and all my friends really love this game and that this is not just a fun little lark. You guys have a goddamn business on your hands, which means reinvestment. So not only do we have to worry about this print run, we got to worry about the next year ahead of time. You want to know why Tim Cook is the CEO of Apple? Because when the iPod first came out, there were serious questions on exactly how well it was going to do. Tim Cook, who was the supply chain whisperer and was really, really good at getting parts from everywhere to make sure that the final product was made as cheaply, efficiently, and with as much quality as they required, said, no, fuck that. Let's order three times as much as we need. As it turns out, the iPod was a massive hit, and they actually had the supply to satiate demand as it became one of the most biggest and most transformative products in technology history. Because he bet big going into it. But it was a bet. And so that's where we face right now with Contender. We understand that we have a year and change to sell this game, and it is very obvious that people really like this concept. And we believe, based on our playtest, that that will only increase once these things get out into the wild and people actually start playing it because it's an actually super fun game. However, for us right now, that means that we have $82,000 that not only has to satiate what everybody has prepaid for, but we now have to figure out how much we're reinvesting. And that means that we have very little take-home money. We are doubling down. We are betting. So internally, we are jumping up and down and super excited that we're going to get over $100,000. But if we could do more than that, it would be insane. Because it would give us the ability to not only have a little bit more for us, for our troubles, for running this thing, and especially for Guts and Glory, who you know are working on this and have done such great work, it would be nice to kind of give them a payday. But also, so we could have more of an opportunity to reinvest and make sure that we make the smartest bets we can because we have financial leeway. So basically, right now, with 10 days to go, two-thirds of the way through our journey, $82,000 in the bank, we find ourselves really, 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 really buckling down. We've sent a bunch of shit to press people. We have sent a bunch of shit to anybody that we have known to be friendly to us. And now we're just hoping Because what we found is that the more this shit gets out in front of people, the more people like it. The more people buy it. The more people are attracted to it. So here's what I would ask you guys. If this is not the time, if you already put your money in, thank you. We also we might have some new tiers since the last time that you guys checked. We got our 2016 expansion, we got our presidential package, and we got our collector's edition. So if you want to upgrade your shit, upgrade your shit. But this isn't about money. This is about spreading the word. Now is the time where we want to make it as big of a thing as possible. So when we go to press, we can say, hey, look, we're already the most funded political Kickstarter of all time. That's all you. We are already 500% funded. That's all you. Now, it's time to let the nation know about it. Because again, y'all believe in it. I believe in it. We think America can believe in it as long as we let them know. If you know anybody who's in a campaign, you know anybody who's in a press that might want a copy, holler at your boy, JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line and write contender in there, too, if you don't mind. Otherwise, we want to extend every possible option to get this in front of as many people as possible. We don't necessarily need your money. Although, if you want to give us your money, it's totally cool. But we do need your enthusiasm. Get out there, tweet about it, Facebook it, let anybody that you possibly think would like this know about it. Because we're in the final home stretch now, and we're going to go to New Hampshire, to South Carolina, to Florida, to California, and then all the way to the White House. Pya! Your email's coming up right after this. To JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com. Again, that is JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com. Just go ahead and put Jury in the subject line, J-U-R-Y in the subject line. By the way, if you wanted to get to that contender, is thecontender.us. Again, that is T-H-E contender.us. You can go right to the Kickstarter by going to thecontender.us/Kickstarter. We begin with Vance. Hey, Jury, I need your advice. I love my current job a lot, but a lot of things have been going downhill. They treat us like crap. I've been there for about 8-9 years, and I make $10.26 a shift, plus a shift premium of 75 cents. But when the first year got here and went up to where I am as in job responsibility, he makes about 25 cents less than I do. And he's just fresh out of high school. He started to wonder. His job is at a plastics factory, inspecting parts for defects or running the press as a semi without insert, as a semi with inserts. A few days ago, I found the home jobs page at Apple's website and actually considered applying for a position. The part of being a home while my lady is cooking our baby is a perk. This will be our first together, but in total, between the two of us, it will be our fourth. My applying for me feels like I'm betraying my current job and my family, quote-unquote, that's on my shift. So should I put in my resume and see the chance of maybe getting hired or not even consider it? Vance, I don't give a fuck if you love your job. Always apply. Always. Always, 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 always apply. This ain't about, like, your job is not your relationship. Loyalty is important. If your job has shown you loyalty, then you deserve to show them loyalty in kind. But this is not unconditional loyalty. Wise man once said to me that no reasonable job would ever be upset with you for leaving if it is for the matters of A, money, or B, happiness. It sounds like another job that would allow you to stay at home might pay you A, more money, and B, make you happier. If your job at that point is mad at you, then they have one of two options. They can offer you more money. They can offer to make you happier. If they cannot match that, then this is not about you being loyal to them. This is about you doing well for your own. You're going to have four motherfucking kids, and I don't care how many of them are super young or out of the house. You need to do well for yourself, your wife, and them. And that means getting your shit out there a little bit, brother. Come on. Flash them titties. See what else Apple's got to say to you. Talking about naked stories. We got a bunch of these in. Thank you so much for sending them. Let's go to the a lady, Jessica, has a military naked story. For most of my career, I worked the night shift on board a naval vessel. Inspections happened in the morning, and day sleepers were told not to shower or wander around after the berthing was cleansed. On most ships, women were all housed together, so you have 250-some-odd females in the same room. One day on deployment, I was dead asleep and was immediately roused by a particular whistle indicating flight quarters and forgot to sign something off upstairs. In the middle of flash changing into my uniform, I hear an uncomfortable cough come behind me. I turn to see both the XO and CO of my ship. The commanding officer was male. The executive officer was female. Mind you, I'm a night shift person, so my mental facilities are not at their prime. As soon as I see the two, I stand at buck naked attention. I was wearing socks, but nothing else, and say, "Good morning, sir. Good morning, ma'am." And then waited to be dismissed, completely unaware of the awkwardness of the situation. After a stunned silence, both of them said, "Good morning," and said, "As you were," and move on with the inspection. I quickly put on my uniform, did my chores, and went back to sleep. I completely forgot about the encounter until my chief calls me into his office and yells for a bit. At the end, he said, "At least you kept your goddamn bearing through all of that." After that, my daily briefing with the CEO and XO became a lot more interesting. Since the incident, my public speaking has improved dramatically, and my fear of being vulnerable in front of others has gone out the window. Look at that's like a superhero origin story. That is awesome. Thank you for writing that in, Jessica. That's so funny. Oliver writes about political correctness, which we talked last week. Well, of course, this guy has an opinion on political correctness, he says of himself. As a quick note, the political and the term political correctness actually refers to the political theory, specifically the Marxist scientific tradition, not electoral politics. The term was coined by Michael Foucault in an essay you can read at tiny.cc/PCYOLOSWAG420. The reason it's a problem, although the word political, but rather the world is not the word political, but rather the word correct. Political correctness stands in opposition to other kinds of correctness, especially factual correctness. Political correctness, in practice, is when you say something you know is not true or don't say something you know is true because it is out of line with proper political thinking. Proper political thinking, of course, means popular political thinking, which means political fashion. It is politically incorrect to say that Caitlyn Jenner is a man, even though we all know for absolute 100% knockdown fact that it's true. That would not have been politically incorrect to say 10 years ago, but it's politically incorrect now because we have a popular political theory going around the power and gender and self-determination. By this definition, Donald Trump isn't politically incorrect because it's not a factual statement to call people names. He's just an awful person. Offense comes into it because the current political climate can accommodate almost any victimhood story. Nearly anything can make you a microaggressor. And since that happens, you're pretty much a Klansman. So a lot of people get scared into saying anything, into not saying anything meaningful about anything. But the bigger problem is the substitution of political fashion for actual reality. I'm not a big Bernie Sanders fan, but when he's not allowed to share his ideas for how to actually help disadvantaged communities because he hasn't used the magic words to describe disadvantaged communities, something's gone off the rails, as it happens. Jonathan Haidt just wrote a great article on this, on the practical effect of political correctness, which you can read at tiny.cc/TriggerDeesNuts420Swag. And that is TriggerDeesNuts 420Swag. Thank you very, very much, Oliver. So I agree with a fair amount of what you're saying. I think where we can have a substantive and adult conversation is that our current climate, I don't think, is overly sensitive to political correctness. Now, that's not to say that people don't get caught up in this kind of stuff, and it's not to say that there's not a chilling effect on speech, but I just don't think it's about political correctness. I believe the biggest problem that we have is we are at a transformative phase by way of internet communication and being open to so many more opinions and specifically life experiences that we now are realizing the grand vulnerability of society in a way that we really weren't able to before when we had lesser media outlets. There were only so many gatekeepers that it would allow so many stories to be told. And yet now we have compelling, interesting, and available stories about vulnerabilities from gender, race, sexuality, Kevin Bacon, everything, okay? We now know more about it. Bernie Sanders doesn't catch shit from the Black Lives Matter people because he didn't use the magic words. He catches shit because people, A, expect more from him in that community, and B, not understanding that the nomenclature means something is taken as inherent disrespect. Now, that's foreign to me. It's probably foreign to many of you. However, I know it, I suspect it to be true because I have seen the pain and anger from that community. Now, does that mean that that community is 110% right about everything? No. But does that negate the fact that there is pain there? No. Now, I know, Oliver, that that's not exactly what you were saying, but I think that that is the larger element of where we get into, oh, that's not politically correct, kind of argument that we get into. And what you were saying that, you know, a microaggression equals a Klansman, that's the bugaboo that I would love. If there is anything that I can do for listeners of this show, for viewers of this show, is I want to greatly understand that that's damaging. And to protect yourself from it and to do your best to eliminate that from popular culture. Because we are all microaggressors. We are all elephants in the bed rolling around and injuring those without realizing it. However, it doesn't make us bad people. It only makes us bad people if we refuse to understand that we might be doing it. Ben Franklin writes in about Donald Trump. I think you're underestimating his ego. Whatever you might think about his effects on the Republican primaries, he'll be disastrous to Republicans' chances to win a general election. As it's been pointed out, Donald Trump is a clown and only clowns will vote for him. But 15 to 20% of the Republican Party are clowns. So when Trump gets 15 to 20% of the primary votes, his ego is big enough and he has enough money to think he can win in a general election. So he runs in the general as an independent and again gets 7 to 10% of the vote. But the problem for Republicans is that 7 to 10% will only be Republicans. So in a presidential race between two non-incumbents, the president needs to win by an extra 7% to offset the clowns from their party, voting for Trump and not them. This win percentage is pretty much unheard of in presidential elections, and we haven't seen anything from the Republican field to make me think that candidates are capable of such a huge win. So as a Democrat, I would like to thank Donald Trump for Ross Perot-ing this whole election. It still remains to be seen. I still believe that Trump's play will be to sell out to the person that will eventually beat him in the primaries. Because that's the only way he gets paid. And yes, he has ego, but he also sells business books. And I think it would be best for his business to say, I'm the only person who made money from a presidential campaign, as opposed to anything else. You can email the show, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. You can also find this podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or some other shit. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. I've been Snapchatting a lot, man. I almost missed my fucking flight out to Austin. And you can, if you're following me on Snapchat, man, you get to watch the whole goddamn thing unfold in real time. If you follow me at Justin R. Young, that's Twitter and Instagram as well. Again, Contender Game is where you want to find the contender, thecontender.us/Kickstarter. Join the conversation, hashtag at diamondclub.reddit.com. But ladies and gentlemen, should you find yourself out in this deep, dark, cold world, should you find yourself getting fired from your... Well, no, fuck Jared. if you find yourself being cornered by your affiliation to AshleyMadison.com, well, remember, your old tauntaun hoodie clad friend, clad friend, Justin Robert Young, as he whispers into the winds and therefore into your ears, wherever you may be, please don't!
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Well, I got a thing for blue eyes and a big old butt. Driving down the road working for F-Dot, the new girl says I'm kind of a slut. Well, I said a wink in the night, I got a little thing for blue eyes and a big butt.